East Carolina Manuscript Collection, Oral History Interview, conducted December the 3rd, 1976, with Mr. R. Maine Albright of Raleigh, North Carolina. This is reel number 2 of a 2-reel interview.
When the labor organizations interviewed him, they had some pretty sharp questions down, incidentally, including, and this is why it was one of the big factors in my getting some support from them, was the same George Baldanzi, whom I had known overseas, who had been sent over by National CIO. He was here helping the CIO at that time and helping get AFL and transportation workers together. And there's some very sharp questions, and I understood later, and I don't say this in criticism of Scott at all, but they felt that he simply had not been exposed to anything in politics but agricultural politics, that he didn't know about workman's compensation. He didn't know anything about employment security, even what the Department of Labor even in here. His field had been in agriculture, and his father's before him, and so he was not as attractive a candidate to labor. And I think our political philosophies, while both headed in a certainly more liberal direction than Charlie Johnson's or the Democratic Party was, were quite different in themselves, even if in the same generalized direction. I had been all my career up to this point, and since then too, if you can be both these things at once, a sort of loyal opposition to the Democratic hierarchy in the state. I felt we'd had good government, but I thought we missed most of our opportunities. I thought it was so closely controlled that it was not open to the average citizen. Now, our very low voting record is one good example. This is true in nearly all the southern states. Our one-party system is good for the controlling party. Unfortunately, we had a good and conscientious party with a remarkably a proper, not a corrupt record, but nevertheless, it was a close-held organization that was not fully conscious of the needs of the people of the state. And I've always tried to preach that and work for it in the things that I ran for. So I was undoubtedly the most liberal of the candidates, not only theoretically, but what I would like to have seen. And my program at that time stated things that somebody could still campaign on today, I feel. For instance, I thought our welfare grants ought to at least be up to the average of the nation. I thought we ought to do something about our terribly low per capita income status. And that I think one thing that I was preaching all over again, at least in the things that affect the health and welfare and enlightenment of the people of the state, our expenditures for schools and welfare grants and other things of this kind, ought at least come up to the national average. If we can't lead the nation, let's at least be up to the average, which would rank very far below it. And we fooled ourselves. I also used a 1925 conservation and development booklet to show what we were talking about. They proclaimed loudly to the world that North Carolina, the fifth state today, and by all the statistics that we had, we were near a fifth to the bottom in all the measurements you want to take: wage, literacy, income, diet, almost all of these things. So, anyway, I guess a sort of a crusader in that field, and in this campaign, I had the admirable but not very practical idea that a man as young as I was for a gubernatorial candidate, been out of the state for years without proper funds or without administration backing, could change the direction of the state to a more liberal stance and to a different break in the leadership. Now, when Scott came in, he and the people that he brought with him did break that old tradition, right, of the one faction control. We reverted to it to some extent since, but that broke the mold. We've had more open elections ever since then.
Mm-hmm. I have some other questions on such as your of your campaign issues, yeah. such as the government reorganization, the Industrial Relations Act, but I may want to save those for later. I would like to ask you about one time there was some published reports of dirty politics at precinct meetings. At least there was some commentary in the News and Observer about someone in your campaign, I don't know if it was you or your campaign manager, who was made charge of some unsavory things were going on at the Democratic precinct meetings or some rigged precinct meetings. Do you recall anything concerning that?
I don't remember a thing in the world about precincts meeting. It was certainly true, and still is, unfortunately, that even more than in the state, a few people have generally controlled the precinct meetings. The main reason is because they're the only ones that go to them. And those that did were usually the old line rather than say the new line Democrats. I'm sure I kicked about that, but I remember nothing at all about any dirty politics in precincts. Now, the general report, of course, was of the misuse of the absentee ballot, which became so notoriously bad that. We Democrats abolished it in the primary and only kept it for the general elections to work on the Republicans. And I think I may have said I thought that was a little unfair. And of course, we reformed the absentee ballot considerably since then. But it was used terribly. And some Western counties, I think I have commented on this, not during the campaign so far as I know. There were at least reports believed to be reliable that in some precincts and some areas they would hold out absentee ballots to see just how many votes they needed to carry on the administration candidate, and then somehow bring in enough absentee ballots to swing the tide. There were widespread reports and investigations of some extent, whether official or not, after the Hood McDonald campaign about how that was done.
There was some of this in the Fountain Erringhouse campaign 32 up in Lincoln County, I know. Mm-hmm.
Usually it's been blamed on the western counties. I guess it's because eastern politicians haven't had to as much. They have been so in control of things. Another interesting characteristic of North Carolina politics, how the East, first with a majority, but with an increasing minority of the total votes, has so controlled the politics of the state. Mm-hmm. And the old plant merchant tradition of running the town politics and the General Assembly has prevailed for an awfully long time in the General Assembly. Fine people, but with backward ideas as far as modern economics and modern government is concerned. And our legislature that I kicked about too some was run on a pretty largely on a factional basis. I don't mean just between the two major parties. The Republicans had pretty rough times. If a county sent down a Republican representative, his bills were not given the same attention. That's natural in politics. It would have been the same, I'm sure, if they'd been the shoe was on the other foot. But in addition to that, we did such things occasionally as by law, let the General Assembly determine the salaries and the number of people that could be employed in a county by county and city government sometimes. They could elect who they wanted, choose who they wanted to up there because it wasn't a general statewide election. But in those Republican counties, the General Assembly kept the control of that, which, again, it's just one of those things that happened. But I don't know. I don't know anything about any precinct businesses.
Well, frequently newspapers run stories.
I'd certainly be interested in anything that you think was connected with my campaign. We had little enough precinct organization.
Now, I think it was your campaign that was making the charge.
Oh, I see. Well, that's better.
it was your campaign that was saying that you were having problems due to some manipulating the precinct meetings and something of this nature.
Well, I just really don't recall anything about that. There is always some business of tearing down the other man's signs and that thing going on, but really, I don't know what you're going to do. Amen.
Would it be best to save the major campaign issues, as I said, to until later on this, such as going into your appeal for government reorganization and things of this nature, and just follow through with the rest of your career, or is there anything else on the gubernatorial campaign that you'd like to speak to at this time?
No, I think not. Just to wind up on this same record, my only other major attempt anyway in politics was in 63 when I ran against Harold Cooley for congressman from the 4th North Carolina district. Harold had then been there 30 years in Congress, as had his predecessor before him. By some strange coincidence, they had the North Carolina 4th congressional district seat had been changed less, occupied by fewer people, than any other seat in Congress. Edwin Pugh held it from about 1900 to 32 when he died. George Ross Pugh, his cousin from here, was an interim appointee only. He didn't count. Then Cooley came in 33 and was still holding it at this election in 63. Cooley had been, of course, during the New Deal, he'd been a great agricultural leader. He carried out the agricultural programs like Congressman Dalton carried out Roosevelt's other programs in here. Since that time, though, Cooley had been all involved in the sugar imports and very bitterly criticized for many of his actions in that and in many other matters. And I felt strongly there was a time for replacement and ran hard against him. We'd also reorganized this 4th district, bringing Johnson County and Davidson County, as well as Wake, in it. Wake had over 40% of the population, at least in the county. And I felt it was a good setup. A lot of my friends said, well, give him two more years. But I remembered down east when one aspirant for that for the congressional seat waited about 35 or 40 years for Judge Carr to give him two more years. And it's when he finally did retire, then Larry Fountain won the seat instead of this other man that I'm talking about that waited so long. So that and my other natural impatience of youth, or what was still younger years anyway, I decided this was the time to run for Congress. So we did have an interesting campaign that, as things go, I find many people who remember the trailer and remember the other campaign, but the congressional campaigns don't mean as much and on a more limited basis. I thought it was a much better conducted campaign. We had more programs, more issues. I thought I had a very good chance, and I knew some counties where we would lose. Nash County, of course, was in that Cooley's right. Home county. I figured we would not win Nash, although I carried Nash and Edgecombe by a big vote in the governor's race. That was encouraging. I think I could get them again, but I did not realize how hard it's going to be to take it away from a native son and a tobacco farmer.
That's always a handicap
in that area. So we lost that one pretty bad. I did succeed in carrying my home county of Wake, but I didn't carry any other county in this five county district. Then it was fairly close in Davidson. There again, there was a tremendous amount of money spent in the last few weeks in several of these counties, Davidson County particularly, but in Raleigh and others too. And frankly, many of my friends or certainly associates in Raleigh here had been connected with Cooley campaigns for many years and said, well, we just can't leave him, sorry. So that that was not as significant a campaign. We never did meet in debates exactly. We had one joint meeting about it, and I was real disappointed in that one, because I thought this was a much more successful, much better conducted, more successful campaign than the gubernatorial had been, but for many reasons it wasn't.
Facing an incumbent, particularly one who has a seniority and seniority in your committees and subcommittees, is such a tremendous handicap.
I went to the congressional records up here in the state library and checked that out either before or not before I began this campaign. Maybe I should have done it then. I think I checked it out later. And incumbents were unseated when they were actually ran again. Most many of them dropped out for one reason or another, changes. But what very, very, very rarely, it wasn't, I don't believe there was, I'm sure there wasn't one out of 20 or 30, maybe, it seemed to me it's about 4 or 5 out of 100 that ever was successful in unseating. I just didn't realize it would be that way, but it was. You usually got to wait for them to die out or something else.
Die, retire.
Yeah, right. Well, we haven't touched on law, and we haven't talked about some things about political issues and other things we might want to talk about. I had a great interest in political history in the South, in particular in the political history in North Carolina as it has developed. Aside from my own efforts to be in it and being in a state position. 5 or 6 years, so I'm very vitally interested in that field and in the issues and the changes that have come about. Of course, the biggest one being the racial issue. We might want to talk about that some too.
Now, when you get tired of talking this afternoon,
I think we better go because I do have an appointment later, and I think maybe we've covered enough. But.